CliffCentral.com.
All right, it is Monday morning. We are heading towards level three. That's the latest news anyway on what the president had to say last night. I saw most of it. I did get bored and kind of moved on at some point. I was like, yeah, okay. Huh? Well, yeah, you know, you kind of get the gist of it. Once he'd announced we're going to level three next Monday, I was like, yeah, okay, I don't need to hear the rest.
And well, he started on time.
He did start on time, but then I needed to have a shower and get into bed. So I was like, nah, done. Thank
Your
you.
Your priority.
My priorities. I was looking forward to a nice hot shower, man. That's all I care about. I'm done with this. All right, so some things to talk about this morning, and you can always get hold of us on 079-748-2090. There are some results from the trials that they've been doing on some of these different drugs around COVID-19, right? We know Trump has been talking about hydroxychloroquine, and it's now apparently turned out that this is he said he's taking this stuff. And he's like, well, it's doing nothing to me.
Personally.
Yeah, he's taking it. He says he's taking that along with zinc and some other thing. And, you know, they've been doing these trials, and some people say it works, some people say it doesn't. Who knows? If you want to have your sangoma shake the bones and make you drink some, you know, extract from a plant that he found in his back garden, and you want to do it, do it.
But with all the love in the world, President Trump isn't humble enough to have that perspective of, well, we're just trying it out. Let's see. Let's play it by ear. No, he'll just say, it's the greatest. It's the biggest.
He's jumped into it. He doesn't care.
And he's jumped into it. But in the meantime, new studies are showing that it causes an irregular heartbeat, a 137% increased risk for that irregular heartbeat.
Oh, yeah.
Uh-oh.
Of the patients who were hospitalized between December and April who tested positive, there was a 34% increase in their risk of mortality if they were taking hydroxychloroquine.
So
just say that one more time, please, Leanne.
Hydroxychloroquine. There we go.
So what are they saying? Like, is this basically bad for Trump? Because everybody who likes Trump, they like that he's taking this stuff, right? And the people who don't like Trump are like,
then they must join him and take it too.
Yeah, exactly. But the people who don't like Trump are like, oh no, he must stop taking it because it's bad for him. But if you don't like him, let him keep taking it.
Oh, we just like to see what an idiot he is.
Look, it's clearly already coming back to bite him in the behind, and as well after what he did over the weekend. So during the Obama administration, when the Ebola breakouts happened, there were only in the U.S., and President Trump went on a whole Twitter rant back then saying, how dare the president go out and play golf when there's an Ebola outbreak right now? Clearly, he's not, you know, focused on paying attention with all of the COVID-19 cases in the U.S., and he was seen playing golf. I'm like, come on, man. You aren't helping yourself here. He is just, he doesn't care about what people say.
Well,
President Obama has a major meeting on the NYC Ebola outbreak with people flying in from all over the country, but he decided to play golf! Exclamation mark.
Oh, is that the actual tweet?
That was in 2014, and now he's on the course.
No,
oh, wow.
Shits to give.
No, I wouldn't want to be the leader of any country at the moment, because every decision you make is going to be wrong in some ways, right in others, and it's going to get you into trouble. And I don't know. I mean, as far as I can tell, there are as many studies that tell you that hydroxychloroquine may just have some beneficial effects. That's what I'm seeing. I'm not a doctor. You want to take it, take it. You don't, you don't. The President of the United States is not afraid of this stuff. So for many people, that's good enough for them. Then they're going to start taking it too. Who's got little birds tweeting outside
their
window?
What's going on there?
It's me. I'm in nature.
Are you in nature?
Yes.
What are you?
I'm in my natural habitat.
What are you, outside?
Yes.
What are you doing outside? Let me see that. Turn
I'm
on
having
your
a
camera.
Cigarette.
Oh, you're having a cigarette. Okay. How exciting for you, Leanne.
Because I think Leanne is...
I hear the birds tweeting. It's very nice. It makes me feel like I'm outside. Isn't it cold?
Yes.
What are you wearing?
A shawl.
Oh.
What are you wearing? Okay, you're wearing. Yeah. Look at Leanne having a cigarette outside during the show. How exciting. She's puffing away on something that's probably illegal.
Found your balance.
Oh, by the way,
times.
I'll tell you what you don't need to worry about. Becky Taylor said that if he pulls you over and you're transporting like a packet of cigarettes for your own personal use, he's going to ask you where you got them. He has no right to ask that. Unless he has a warrant to search your car, he has no right to ask you that.
Correct.
So you don't.
Oh, really?
Yeah. You don't have to answer any policeman who says that to you. It's absolute bullshit.
Does that also? Is it particularly about the one packet of cigarettes, or even if I was driving with 18 packets, they have no right to ask me that?
You're not allowed to transport cigarettes in bulk. But if you've got a box of cigarettes, it's fine.
If I just bought in bulk.
No, because where did you buy? You can't be buying cigarettes yes. right now. So that's
stockpiled before the lockdown.
Then why are you transporting them
where
now?
Where are you taking them to?
Yeah.
Yes.
You're looking for trouble now. But basically, if you have your packet of cigarettes that you're smoking, then he can't ask you why. And to search your car, they have to have a warrant.
There's so many tricky and fine lines with this. My parents and I laughed at this news story a couple of weeks ago. And once again, it's another news story because, well, that's all I've been doing with them here. That's how we bond, by watching news channels.
old people,
what a pitiful existence.
Old people love their news channels, hey? Wow.
Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah.
There was a point where I was with my parents probably about a week ago. And they both had their phones out and they were both on like News 24. Oh, my, both telling each other these stories. Someone was arrested for this or this and this
yes.
is happening. They love it.
And they just keep on going and going and going on that. But anyway, on the surface, it was about this man in a rural part of the country clearly bought alcohol and stockpiled beer when he was allowed to. But I think the situation gets a little murky because on his plot of land within the crops that he grows, he had buried his beer in there and he had kept it a secret from his family. And it was just, he was sharing it only with like a friend / neighbor of his.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
The fact that he kept it a secret, that's where the problem first started. And then, you know, people would often see this neighbor sauntering over to his property and then they'd hide the crops and then he'd end up leaving up until there was some investigation done and it was discovered that there's like a shit ton of beer that was underneath the ground.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so the police were called and it was confiscated and like, we feel horrible, but because he was just crying saying, I'm drunk, you know, my kids are happier because I'm friendlier and I play with them. I just need my beer, bring back my beer. But I thought, oh man.
I totally get that.
Poor
you
guy.
Know, so it is.
Poor guy, but like, it was his beer. He wasn't even stolen it from anyone, right?
That's it, no.
So he's allowed to bury his beer if he wants to. What the hell?
So I think even if I did stockpile and I was... What if, you know, in that 1 week grace period, I was traveling between provinces with 18 packs of cigarettes? Would that also be wrong then?
Yeah, I mean, leave the guy alone. You have no right to take away his stuff. Yeah, and this is the problem. Like, a lot of the illegal tobacco sales are happening because police people who've confiscated this stuff are reselling it.
Ooh.
So you think about that for a second, Becky Taylor. How about you get your cops who are selling this stuff to stop? And then we'll all stop buying it. I want him to investigate the policemen who are selling the confiscated goods.
Own house in order.
Right. Don't point your finger at us. Summon a bitch.
I win.
It's true.
That escalated very fiercely.
Tidy up your own shit first. Worry about mine. Sure. Arrest some dude for burying beer. Some poor alcoholic dude for burying beer in his back garden. All right, firefighters. Firefighters are warning people never to leave hand sanitizer in the car. Now, this is interesting because I started a fire on Saturday. You know, like an outside fire for people to sit around.
Like not in your car.
No, and to get it started, I used some hand sanitizer, and it worked like a charm.
Oh.
Yeah. Oh.
So one thing we've all got lying around, and hand sanitizer is about 60 to 70% propanol, which is surgical spirits, basically. So you can use that to start a fire. It's a very good fire. You put the fire lighters in, you pile up the wood, and then you pour on some hand sanitizer, which then transports the flames to the fire lighters, and then it starts the fire properly.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's very difficult for hand sanitizer to start a fire in your car, just involving heat.
Yeah.
But in the US, especially where it's going to be summer now and people are leaving their hand sanitizers in their car, there are concerns that they could explode in the heat with a mixture of like concentrated bright sunlight and excessive heat. It could happen. So it's the likelihood is low, but the same as for a tear gas canister, for example, that could also explode in your car. So you need to rather keep it in your handbag. You'll know.
You're now. Well, I don't have a handbag, so what am I going to do?
Great.
Put it in your bra.
I don't have a bra. What am I going to do? You're making this so difficult for me, Leanne. My head is going to explode. I'm thinking so hard.
Put it in your satchel.
Just can we stop with this hand sanitizer stuff? It's just overkill. I mean, like the guy was, I went to the shops, when was it, on Friday? And he's like, can I please spray this on your hands? I'm like, no. I know, I just cleaned my hands before I got in the car and came to you. I don't want you spraying that shit on
me. Oh, no, Gareth. Just have the hand sanitizer.
Well, I did, because I didn't want to be denied entry to the shop, you know, so I could do my...
Oh, you thought, no.
I said to him, no, I don't want you to spray that. He's like, no, you've got to. So I was like, all right, fine.
I see where I went to the shop now. They're sanitizing the trolleys, and then the ones that are sanitized get a clothes peg put on them. So you know that they're sanitized. Also, once the guy at the door runs out of pegs, it means that there are enough people in the store.
What? So I thought it was quite clever. What a stupid world we live in at the moment. We are going to be laughing. Our children and grandchildren will be laughing about what idiots we were in the year 2020 with this dumb disease. They're going to laugh at us. They're going to say, you people were so stupid.
I hope you're right, Gareth.
Telling you.
I really hope you're right.
Telling you. Wait and see. It's very exciting. All right, so just don't leave this stuff lying in your car, right?
Yeah, don't leave it lying in your car. A really, really cute story, which I loved, is a number of dolphins at the seaside cafe in Australia are bringing humans gifts from the sea. So humpback dolphins, much like humans, try and woo their potential partners by giving them gifts. So they carry on their snouts big chunks of coral, sea sponges, pretty things like that. And what they've been doing at this cafe, usually there are people in the water playing with the dolphins, and apparently they're craving human attention and they're trying to figure out why they're not inundated with people coming to play with them. So they've started bringing to shore all of these sea sponges and pieces of coral. As if to say, where are you guys?
Like, why are you guys ignoring us? That's so cute.
It's so cute. The squad is consisted of Mystique, the alpha male. The rest of his squad are Patch, Ella, Harmony, and Squirt.
Oh, them. And okay, I know them, yeah.
Yeah. And they keep bringing these, like, barnacles and all sorts of things onto the shore in these offerings to the humans that aren't there.
Like, please come back and play with us.
Yeah, I think it's so cute.
No, they can't even believe how stupid we are with this COVID-19.
And then in other animal news, an alligator said to have belonged to Adolf Hitler has died.
Hitler's alligator.
I mean,
could Hitler have been any more horrible? I mean, he had an alligator.
If you could think of a pet for Adolf Hitler, it would be an alligator.
That is unreal.
Something really ugly. So this alligator has died. It was in the Moscow Zoo, actually. His name was Saturn, and he was found by British soldiers in Berlin after World War II. He was then handed to the Red Army and taken to Moscow. And he has been an attraction since 1946. Originally born in the wild in Mississippi in 1936, before being caught, shipped to Germany and placed in Berlin Zoo. That was pre-war. He was in the Nazi leader's pet collection. He actually escaped after the zoo was bombed in 1943, and he was found 3 years later in 1946.
Wow.
But anyway, he has died at the age of 84.
Hitler's alligator, everybody.
If that alligator could talk.
Imagine you were like, this is the alligator that belonged to Adolf Hitler. What a thing.
Yeah, he probably had a bit of unwanted cred in the streams.
Yeah, he's definitely the most unpopular alligator of all time. Who was your boss? Well, my boss was Ted Bundy. Oh, okay. Who was yours? Adolf Hitler. Oh, get out of my sight.
Oh, my gosh.
Unreal.
And why did Hitler even have an alligator?
Because Hitler was a shit, didn't you? I mean, pick up a history book. Anything that was horrible had to have something. He loved horrible stuff.
What the hell?
He's just a horrible person.
Do you think the alligator would eat human beings and be like, oh, that was terribly un-Aryan?
Whoa. Yeah, probably. Probably had a racial complex, yeah.
Oh, no.
What a weird, weird guy.
Maybe he didn't want to be associated with Adolf Hitler, and that's why he ran away as well.
Yeah. Hitler also had a vulture and a cutworm. There was Hitler's cutworm. Uh-uh. What else? What other shit animals are there that he would want? An alligator. Hey, who wants that for a pet?
Oh, he had like a butt-faced pig.
Yeah. Yeah. He had a tube full of pathogens that he would do talk to in the morning. Hello, little bacteria.
He had a platypus that had athlete's foot.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Hello, mein Schatz.
Yeah, he had a bunch of animals that were in the Third Reich as well.
Yes.
Lots of animals.
Yeah. Yeah, those are called the SS.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah. It's a little obvious, okay. But there we go. God.
What a shit of a human being.
Total shit of a human being.
There's no way you can disguise
it. I was reading the other night, you know, the one animal that I'm really like not thrilled to see and it scares the hell out of me is like a Nile monitor. You know those rock
Komodo the dragon.
Well, no, you get them here. Legavon.
Yeah. Oh.
They're horrible things, right? They the proper name is a Nile monitor. And these things, they live in rivers. And, you know, I've got a river right in front of my house. So I know that they live in there. I've seen them. Mm-hmm. I've seen them before. And these are the things that scare me the most. So, yeah, this would be, I don't know what the most scary thing in the world is to you. But whatever that is, imagine it living near your house.
Oh, that's horrible. How have they not eaten the bunnies?
Heaven alone knows. But it's one of my big fears that I'll walk outside and see this thing fatter than usual, and then the remains of a bunny lying near it.
I think the horrible thing about them is how quick and agile they are.
Oh, they're revolting. And they can
swim. Their bodies
swim.
Are lifted way off the ground compared to a crocodile, and they can run really fast.
They can run. They're horrible. And they've got this really powerful jaw that can like break an ostrich egg or whatever. So I read, because you know how you sometimes like to scare yourself? So I was lying in bed the other night and I couldn't sleep. And I went online.
So you looked at videos of Legavon.
I looked at videos of them. And there are people who actually keep them as pets.
Who? In their right mind?
Hitler. I'm sure that Hitler.
All right.
But people like that, just real shit people who would have kept one of these things as a pet. I mean, they're horrible animals. There's nothing nice about them. Nothing. They're not friendly. Apparently, they're not. You cannot tame them at all. They can't. They can learn to count to six. That's the most impressive thing they can
do. Well, that's very impressive.
They can count to six, which is more than Jacob Gedleklegi Zazuma could get right. He only knew one, two, and many.
Listen, they survived a couple of 100 million years. They've done all right.
Yeah, but then for a pet, really, you could do a lot better than that. All right, I want to talk to somebody who I've been interested to speak to for some time now. He's got a business called All Told, and they do research on what South Africans are thinking at the moment, because we hear a lot about what politicians, economists, and other experts, most of whom have let us all down, think of COVID-19. What are ordinary South Africans thinking? So Alan, who is an entrepreneur just like the one that you might be, or someone you might know, has put together an ongoing survey to give all South Africans a voice so that our opinions are heard and considered by our decision makers and policy makers. It's not just these experts who've got it so wrong. So Alan Todd is on the line with us right now. He's going to tell us what his research is showing. Hey, Alan, how are you?
I'm very well, Gareth, and yourself?
Very, very good. So you've been doing this research. Just tell us quickly about the methodology, because there are going to be people who say, "Ah, well, anyone can do research. You just go on the internet now and you just pull out 100 opinions." So you've done this properly, right?
We've done this properly, yes. I've been a market researcher for 30 years, and I've had a bit of practice at this. And in the last 10 years in particular, I've had practice at doing research online. Now, 10 years ago, the penetration of the internet into South African homes sat at around 11%. And these days, we're up at 60%. So theoretically, at least, you can reach 60% of South African households online. Of course, many of those households are poor and can't afford data. So although they're online, they're theoretically online only.
Right.
That said, we're able to, via online methods, reach the economically active portion of the South African population.
Okay.
And economically active South Africans are those who live in a household with a monthly income of more than 8,000 rand a month, which is not a lot of money.
No.
But those economically active South Africans who account for 30% of the population, only 30% of households, actually spend 80% of household income and expenditure. So it's a direct measure of the Gini coefficient in South Africa and the inequality. So our survey is amongst the economically active South Africans. Sadly, it's very, very difficult to reach down into the lower 70% whose lives must be absolutely miserable as a consequence of COVID-19.
All right, so what have we discovered? Let's put aside those who you couldn't measure at this stage and look at the ones that you could. And what are their major concerns? Because a lot of what you've discovered may be useful in helping us to figure out the way forward.
Yes, okay. Well, for me, the most important thing that I've learned, and by the way, I just want to comment that this is an ongoing survey. The attitudes and opinions change so quickly that it's impossible to measure effect of COVID-19 on South Africa if you do a point-in-time survey and a point-in-time only. This has to be done on a continuous basis. The scores change dramatically from week to week. So it's really important, this notion that this is an ongoing rather than a point-in-time.
All right, so what are people...
For me, the single big...
Yeah, what are people saying? Sorry.
Yeah.
Go on.
The biggest takeout for me, Gareth, is that there's lots of talk about unlocking the South African economy and getting the factories pumping and getting people back to work and all of that. And absolutely that has to happen whatsoever about the fact that for economically active South Africans, money is just too tight to manage. These economically active South Africans, of which you're one and I'm one, everybody, not all, just about, is feeling the pinch in some way. And I can see from the 9 weeks that we've been tracking, or 8 weeks that we've been tracking, we're going into our ninth week now, that for 60%, income is shrinking. Whether if I earn commissions, I haven't been earning any commissions, my salary has been reduced by 20%, or worse still, 100%. But for 60% of economically active South Africans, their income has been shrinking. And for 76%, they're spending less.
Yeah.
And of course, you might say, well, of course, they're spending less because the shops aren't open. Well, what else are they to do with their money? So they've got a nice little cash pile going. I don't know how many businesses have got their eye on that cash pile, but I think that more businesses have got their eye on that cash pile than you'd like to believe.
Yeah, from a market research point of view, what this is telling you is that people's behavior has changed completely. I mean, what they may have been doing with their money 4 or 5 months ago, they're not able to do, and most of them don't have that money in the first place.
Yeah.
But if they do, they're being very cautious and very careful.
Yeah. I predict, and you should never predict, fools predict, but I will predict based on the research that I've seen, that we will enter now into an era of frugality. Consumers will be becoming increasingly frugal for deals. They will be looking for low price options to substitute for the more expensive price options that they were looking at before. A classic example is in the automotive world. We asked consumers in the last round, and I'll repeat it again this week because I haven't got a sample, but it's indicative. I've got a couple of 100 people. When you're planning on buying a car, and I think it was 20% of them said, yeah, actually I was before lockdown.
Hmm.
Okay, now that this has all started, how do you buy another car? Well, it's a new car for you, but another car. Half of them are now saying, well, actually, I'm not going to buy a car. I'm going to stick with the car that I've got.
Yeah.
So going to buy a car, they're going to buy a cheaper one. A quarter of them are saying, I'm going to go for a cheaper one. So there's another slice that gets taken out of the market.
I mean, this is purely anecdotal, but I put my car on the went to one or two of these sites just to see what I could get for it. And they said to me, look, to be perfectly frank, both of the sites that gave me feedback, to be perfectly frank, we're actually only looking at selling cars under, I think it was 200,000 Rand at the moment. That's the only market that's moving for them right now. So it is anecdotal, but it might be, you know, something to add into the research. So what are people spending money on? I mean, they're spending money on food because that's an essential. They're probably spending a little bit of money on what? Fuel, the prices come down for fuel, but they're not traveling. I mean, what are people actually going to do if they do have some money?
Well, I believe that they will be preserving a cash pile. I think a lot of South Africans got caught with their pants down on this lockdown and found, oops, I haven't got enough money in the bank. I'm short of money. And the fact that you've been in lockdown for 8 or 9 weeks means that you're spending less, and so your cash pile is growing. And we can see evidence of that in this research. Well, it's more than evidence. It's quite significant. I want to get to a slide where I can give you some precise numbers on that.
All right.
Thinking if it's going to help me. No, I'm not going to get bogged down trying to find one of my slides. But oh yes,
it's a lot of research. Go on.
I've got it. In lockdown 4, which was only 3 lockdown weeks ago, based on this data that I've got here, 31% said that they've got a respectable cash pile. And by lock 6, that's up to 46%. So there's a measure of the money that they're not spending. And you're quite right, they're spending the money on essentials. There's absolutely no flippancy happening. There are one or two people that will be lashing out. I've been listening to your show earlier and listening to the story about the guy buying the Lamborghinis and the Jeeps and the people that are drinking more than they would normally.
Sure.
More, by the way, in economically active land anyway, are only 4%.
Sure.
So not many are doing that.
So,
Just
tell me about the respondents to the questionnaire, because you've had like 1,400 unique respondents every week, right? And and the questionnaire, as you said, it keeps going. So you're discovering how attitudes have changed. How are people feeling about the lockdown, not just in terms of their own economic activity and their own inability to maybe trade or to do normal things, but how are they feeling about the restrictions on alcohol, the restrictions on certain kinds of products, the restrictions on tobacco. How are people responding to that, and how's that changed over the 10 weeks or so that we've been in lockdown?
Well, quite dramatically, quite a dramatic shift there. shifts in terms of their rebelliousness. I had mention of that word earlier in your program this morning.
Yeah.
But the one thing that hasn't really shifted much is there's still a high level of fear of the SARS-CoV-2 virus. No question about that. When this started out, only 15% of economically active South Africans were fearless or said, actually care about this virus. I don't give a rat's ass about it. I'll be all right. And that has gone up. It's gone from 15% to, I think, 36% or 35%. The majority of the population are fearful, are still fearful of SARS-CoV-2. This is really important to understand. You might be fearless. I might be fearless, and I am, as it happens. But I have to acknowledge and respect the fact that most people around me, economically active people around me, I can't comment on the lower socioeconomic spectra of the country. Most people around me, two out of three, are fearful of the virus. That has to be respected. You have to hand sanitize your hands when you go into the supermarket. You don't have an option. You have to social distance. It's not optional. If you respect your fellow human beings and say, well, they have a right to their feelings as much as I have a right to mine.
Right. Okay. Well, that's that's useful to know. So the number of...
Yeah. To your question, Gareth, which was, how are they feeling about lockdown? Well, I've got measures here from lock two through to lock six. So I've got one, two, three, four, five periods. Now, in lock two, we had 32% of people feeling pissed off, saying, I hate it or I dislike it. 3, 4, 5 weeks later, that shot up to 58%. So that's a dramatic shift. We've now got more than half the people hating being in lockdown or disliking being in lockdown. Yeah. There's always the freaks, that, and that's been consistent throughout. There's been a consistent 10% of us enjoy lockdown. These are the antisocial introverts.
Those are people who are actually enjoying it.
Enjoying it, yes. So there are some.
All right. Tell me about the attitude of people towards economic collapse and the reality starting to set in around some people who've got no employment at the moment, people who've got no job to look forward to at the end of this, people who have no income right now. That must have also changed their attitude during the period of lockdown.
Without a doubt, you know, that the wealth lobby, the flatten the curve and open up lobby, has grown from 26% at lockdown three to 40-50% at lockdown six. That's a dramatic growth. So a shift away from the health lobby, they suppressed the virus and closed down, which started off at 57 and is now down to 34%. So there's a dramatic sea change happening here in terms of health or wealth. And the shift is definitely towards wealth.
You know, we look at America and what's going on there at the moment, that 38 million people have filed for unemployment checks. That's extraordinary. That, you know, there are 130 million, I think, Americans who are economically active and employed. Now, in South Africa, we had bad unemployment before this crisis, so we already were dealing with a problem there. But for many South Africans, this is going to make things a good deal worse. Do you have any statistics on people's attitudes based on the research that you've done to a new kind of reality setting in?
I don't. And this week, the focus, I mean, there are we take every week, variables that we track, TFR, et cetera, et cetera. We're going to be exploring that very topic. Your expectations when you go out, like on the outside.
Oh my God, this line is so terrible. Alan, can you just do me a favor? Just turn off your video because the last couple of sentences I heard not a single thing. It was breaking up so badly. And this is all because, in case people are confused as to, it's not just mine or Alan's internet connection. We've got this cable which has been giving us trouble somewhere in the Atlantic, and they're trying to fix it. So maybe this will help. Alan, just say that again. Sorry, the last little bit we missed completely.
Okay. So what I was saying is, for me personally, I've been very much in lockdown until about 2 weeks ago, I had cause to drive from where I live in Franschhoek. And when you get locked down in Franschhoek, you can't get out because there's roadblocks and you've got to have a permit or a good reason. And I had neither. But on this occasion, 2 weeks ago, I went into Cape Town. And the feeling that I had, this is very surreal. There's something otherworldly about this. This is not like it was before. And I suspect it never will be. And for a lot of people coming out of lockdown, next week will be their first real venturing out into the world. I think they're going to experience that weirdness, surrealness. And that's definitely going to influence their behaviors. If you compound that with their fearfulness, I think it's going to be very interesting. I think next week, the beginning of level three is going to be a very, very interesting read.
Well, yeah, psychologists are talking about this re-entry anxiety and what it means for mental health and how people respond to suddenly finding themselves free to move again. It's going to have a profound impact on the way people feel.
I mean, you mentioned mental health. I've always been a bit cynical of mental health snowflakes, but this piece of research has opened my mind up to the fact that this is a big issue in the minds of human beings. I mean, from the off, 74% were concerned about the consequences of all of this on the mental health of South Africa. That score has risen to 85%. It is consistently high. Real issue. I used to think it's not a real issue. It is a real issue. As a human being, you have to acknowledge that there's people out there who are scared of the virus, who are scared of mental health issues,
That's a very interesting point. I think that there's probably also, I mean, we can look at the practical stuff. We can look at, the economic effects of all of this. But really, people's lives and most of what they're going through at the moment is the stuff immediately around them. It's not the economy at large. It's not the world. Yeah. It's not this virus. It's how it's affecting their relationships and how it's affecting their immediate health. And part of that is mental health.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. I will never, ever be deprecating of mental health snowflakes again as a consequence of the insights I got here.
So we're talking to Alan Todd about his research that he's been conducting over the last couple of weeks of lockdown, and he's been monitoring people's responses, about 1,400 of those every single week. Questions around what people are doing, how their behavior is changing, what they're thinking, how they're feeling, spending habits. Are there any things that have surprised you, Alan?
Look, the whole thing is a surprise. From week to week, it's an amazing surprise. I was surprised at when we got to level five, week one, at how the perceptions about how well the government is handling the situation soared. I was interviewed on ENCA and saying it, we're so blessed that we've got a government that's taking control so well and winning the confidence of the people. And it took 6 weeks for that score to go from 78% approval down to 30%. A dramatic. I was blown away by that. I couldn't believe how fickle people are in their attitudes towards things. I wouldn't be surprised if this week, based on the president's speech last night, that the approval ratings soar up to 55, 60%. It's very, very unstable. All the more reason why you can't measure this sort of thing in a point-in-time survey. It has to be tracked on a continuous basis, no question.
This is easily the biggest event, according to, again, the results of your survey, that people feel this is the biggest event since 1994.
Yes.
That's interesting. Yeah.
Yes, no, absolutely. The other things that have interested me is to see which lockdown regulations are the ones that irritate people the most, that get up their noses, And it's interesting because I measured which ones make you feel uncomfortable and which ones do you think are unfair.
Okay.
So if you cross-tabulate those, you can see the ones that are both uncomfortable and unfair. It was interesting for me to see that the very top of the list was restricted exercise allowance. I had no idea that South Africans were so exercise-focused, and I don't believe they are. I believe that not at all. I think most people are couch potatoes. They beer and braai and dop and dum and all of that good stuff that we're used to. And now all of a sudden we're taking grave offense at the fact that there's restricted exercise allowance. I think this is because I've been in house arrest, under house arrest for the last three or four weeks. I can't remember how long we've been allowed to exercise now. And as soon as we were allowed to, it was like, wow, I can go outside. I'm free.
Yeah, even if people are not. I mean, the fact is that you don't like being prevented from it, right? Freedom of movement is like such an obvious one. What are the other ones that irritate people? And what are they most uncomfortable about? That's an interesting question.
That they're most uncomfortable about are not being able to visit family. Mm. Family and friends. Not being able to care is a really, really important thing that we're missing out on in South Africa. Humans are social, and this is working against that natural instinct. But that not being able to embrace your near and dear is the single biggest discomfort that's caused by the lockdown. Okay. Another one, of course, and it's an obvious one, is no liquor, no smoking. Obviously, no liquor is much more uncomfortable than no smoking, because more people drink than smoke. The beach ban, again, if you filter that by people living in KwaZulu-Natal or the Eastern Cape or the Western Cape, the beach ban is a major issue and certainly perceived to be not only uncomfortable but unfair. The hairdresser, I don't know what your hair is looking like, but mine's not looking good. And it'll be a relief when we can get that sorted out. That's more of an uncomfortable than an unfair. But the top of the pops for unfairness is that only certain stores are allowed to open. Anybody that's logical or rational would say Woolworths, but I can't go into Lewis stores.
Yep.
Why? We don't get that. That doesn't make any sense at all.
Yeah, I think it's
so. Yeah, that
all of that will obviously stop being a problem from next Monday. Well, the stores that still survive, but for many people that didn't make sense from the get go. You can't switch on just certain parts of the economy and expect the rest of it to just wait until it's absolutely time. You know.
Yeah.
Oh wow. Okay. Well, this is a lot to digest.
There is a lot here. There is indeed a lot here. There's no doubt in my mind that we used to say the internet changed everything, and I'm fairly confident that that's wrong, that actually it's COVID-19 that's going to change everything. And I think that we're going to see dramatic changes. I think it's wrong to imagine that we will get back to normal quite quickly. That it's just not going to happen. To my mind, it's just not going to happen. Even when people start earning close to what they were earning prior to the crisis, they're going to be adopted behaviors. There's absolutely no question about that. I think social distancing is with us for a long time, at least until such time as there's a vaccine. I think that crowds will be avoided by a lot of people because of the fear of the virus. That's going to put sport out the equation, concerts out the equation, movies out the equation, theatre out the equation. I mean, once you start thinking about it, your mind reels with the impact that this is going to have.
Oh, my God.
I think that people are going to exercise more than what they did before. I think they're going to be grateful for the fact that they're now allowed out and about, and I think that habit will grow. And I think that you were talking about investing in small businesses. I think that investing in any kind of business that has to do with exercise and health will be a good investment. Working remotely is going to become a norm, much more of a norm. All these things that we see that have been exacerbated by COVID-19, they were around beforehand. Edgar's problems were around long before Edgar. Working remotely happened long before COVID-19 came along. But I think working remotely is definitely going to explode onto the scene.
Well, thank you very much for helping us to digest all of this stuff, Alan. It's very interesting information, and I hope your survey continues well past lockdown so we can start measuring the real-world consequences for people once they're allowed out of their houses and curfews are ended and that kind of thing. But this is interesting stuff to work on in the meantime, and thank you for putting it together. Thank you very much. It's Alan Todd and his research All Told that he's been paying attention to over the past couple of weeks and lockdown starting to the reality of lockdown starting to settle into people's minds, even if up to now they were only concerned about the disease, they're now starting to see that there are other consequences as well. Well, that's a lot for us to get through today, so I'm not going to ask you to spend too much more time exercising your brain. Hopefully you get some exercise done, and we can all do some of that. What are you going to do today, Leanne? Some weight training?
I'm not doing that. I'm going to a wool shop to buy some wool for my mother, who has taken to knitting blanket squares.
Okay. All right. Well, that's a good thing to do. Winter's coming. It's going to be cold. So that's a good idea. And there is a cold front predicted for Tuesday. So get ready to pull out those. Pull out your extra warm socks and outfits that will keep you insulated from the cold. At least you don't have to go out unless it's absolutely necessary to buy things.
Yeah, that's the thing.
All right,
electric blankets going on today.
Oy, oy, oy. Okay. I don't know if I'm ready for that yet. We'll have to see. I always say that only when May is over will I start going to heaters and electric blankets, but maybe just...
Yeah, 7 more sleeps.
Mm. Yeah, let's feel it out on Tuesday and decide then. All right, we'll see you on tomorrow morning, 6 o'clock, bright and early. Thanks, everybody. Have a happy day. CliffCentral.com